Welcome back to the latest episode of Blood, Sweat and Fears, the ultimate podcast for athletes before, during and after elite sport. I'm Mark Clement. This podcast is brought to you by EY, Building a Better Working World, and their personal performance program. Alongside me, my co-host Scott Ward, a retired professional footballer who spent the last 10 years working in athlete welfare, leading to the creation of EY's personal performance plan. And welcome back to part two of our rugby special with Harlequins trio, James Horwell, Aaron Morris and Matty Simmons, and recently retired Leicester Tigers and England utility back Matthew Tate.
Do you think you can get addicted to the adrenaline of short-termism? Do you think, you know, of working so quite hand-to-mouth as opposed to having a long-term vision? You've mentioned contracts a few. Well, go on, James.
Yeah, I think you can. The buzz is, that's why you keep doing it. You know, you get this, I always say, you get this buzz from playing from the moment you turn up on match day to run out there. You can't replicate doing anything else. Mm. And that's almost why you want to keep turning up, because that buzz you get and the buzz you get from the success, not so much obviously losing, you know, I hate losing, it sucks, but the winning, the doing something as a team and creating that consistent success is the reason you do it, you know, because I think that's, and that gives you that buzz that gets you going again, and because it's hard to replicate doing something else. And I think that's where a lot of guys struggle post, not that I know, but from when you talk to guys that you speak to, a lot of, you know, guys that I used to play with from back then, that was the thing that they struggled with, that there wasn't that sort of buzz, that thing that they had each week to look forward to, because that's what you play. You train, you do all this training, you put yourself through these horrific sessions to play, because that's what you want to do. We're rugby players or sport athletes, and you want to perform and you want to compete. And I think, you know, when that goes away, that's the difficulty of, you know, what do we do to replace that, or is there, yeah, do we need to replace it?
And that's obviously where addictions play a part,
exactly,
right? Because we've all got obsessive disorder in whatever degree that presents itself. The difficulty is when you don't get that hit of dopamine on the pitch or whatever it is, you're looking around thinking, right, where can I chase it? Mm. And it's extremely dangerous scenario to be in. So again, that goes back to how can we dismantle that thought process in a healthy way to know that when the last whistle is blown, you're not going to be straight out the door on either on a Saturday night or during the week at the bookies or out on the night out getting absolutely obliterated.
I'm kind of, I guess, going through that at the moment.
That was my next question.
Finished very recently.
Do you know what you're going to do?
No, is the honest answer.
Really?
There's the bit, to be honest, I'm missing the most is, I'm not missing necessarily having the proverbial kicked out of me every weekend and feeling like I've been in a car crash on a Sunday, but it's that even a just a weights day, you feel like you've achieved something with your day. Whereas, and as James alluded to, it's that you work week to week as a professional athlete. You if you lose a game, you win a game, you analyze it. We've got objectives, we've got strategy to turn it around the next week. It's the month I've found since I've stopped playing, or known since November, it's that, it's almost the mundaneness of day-to-day life, to be perfectly honest. And that's,
but it must be a little bit of relief at first, like when a season is over, that you can sit on the sofa in your pants or not have to be anywhere.
Is that an insight into your evenings?
Well, it could well be. But and I've got decent ones on today, so I'm perfect. And it's my sofa. If I want to do that, I can do that, can't I? But are you saying once you've had that little bit of relief, oh, the structure's gone, great, I can relax for a couple of weeks, then that thirst to get it back around you comes back?
I've been doing it for 15 years, so it's... it's just the norm. The bizarre thing is actually, like, I could go on holiday now if I wanted, as opposed to you've got a block in May every year. So you almost institutionalize to a certain kind of a way of life, living week to week, knowing that you have a certain sort of day of the week off. You've got a certain period of time for holiday. So it's getting used to that. It's trying to set objectives around, I guess, normal life. So it's, I'm finishing uni at the moment, so it's trying to set schedules to almost be able to tick things off to feel like I've achieved something with my day at the moment. So
you're still finishing uni, because I have a profile here from The Guardian from 11 years ago of you, and you used to go to lectures 9 till 12 doing a degree at Newcastle University. Is this the same degree, or have you got
a new one? You know, I just like to bounce around just doing random degrees. So I did, it's my aim when I left school was I wanted to go into medicine, so I did a biomedical science degree.
Yeah.
I finished half of it, and then the World Cup got in the way. I then moved down to Sale and tried to restart it and couldn't. So I then did my pilot's license. I did a small aircraft license, was there for a couple of years, and then moved down to Leicester and had kids, which got in the way of doing lots of other stuff. So I'm doing a sports directorship master's. I think Kelly was on a couple of weeks ago. And
Kelly Southerton, for anybody that's...
Same programme that she's on at the moment. So we're just at the back end of finishing that.
Good. Well, you've got a strategy in place. Just a couple of other things I want to pick up from this profile 11 years ago. After a game, I'm starving and often murder fish and chips. I dream of fry-ups and I'll eat crisps. I get massive cravings.
It's exactly opposite Welford Road.
Yeah, there is.
Still the same?
Not so much on the fish and chips. I mean, I could just... Crisps are my biggest weakness. I could do without chocolate and sweets.
I'll send out for some. And finally, I relax by listening to running water or constant noises. It can be a shower, the tumble dryer, fans. It's bizarre, but I've always liked it.
And that still remains so, yes.
Is that right? So seriously, you could chill yourself out by sitting on the toilet where the extractor fan's going...
Yeah, I mean, I've spent many a day falling asleep on the toilet listening to the extractor fan. Mine's, for whatever reason, it's the sound of running water and white noise. You can get apps for it now. I'm doing my bit for the environment.
It sounds like my daughter. Just loves a hairdryer at the moment.
Yeah, anything like that. So if I won the lottery, I'd go and do like a tour of the world's waterfalls or something like that, I think.
Wow, there is an insight.
Yes.
And talking of articles taken from the World Wide Web, Simo, it's a rather nice advert I found for you and a mattress company. You,
Mammoth, proud ambassador.
Okay.
As most
you can have one of those and that's it, okay? I'm letting it go. But there is a serious issue here, and we like to do different themes on the different Blood, Sweat and Fears podcast, which is you talk about the value of sleep, and that's got to be something that has to be factored into the world of elite sport. You talk about needing 9 hours a night.
Yeah, I do.
You're looking at me funny now.
No, I love a nap. And I was talking to James on the way in about it, because he's...
so you ain't got kids, have you?
Yeah, no, this is the conversation. So James had a newborn. My partner is 6 months down the line, and I am dreading the sleep deprivation. And everyone mentions it. I don't know how I'm going to cope.
It's funny though, because you do, don't you, right?
Yeah.
But then you look at mattresses as well. You're looking at the muscle and skeletal alignment as well. Yeah. Speaking of somebody who's got back implants and has another operation recently, you know, if you don't sleep well, the ramifications on you trying to train. My last season, I was absolutely horrendous. I had a major cyst on my spine, degenerative discs, which meant I wasn't sleeping very well, which means I couldn't train very well. So although sleep is a massive part, it's your body being able to rejuvenate at night time, and especially with what these guys do on a match day, you know, that lying down can be a saving grace, just at least from a recovery period.
Yeah, but that's from a physical point of view. Actually, from a mental point of view as well, you know, peak periods of stress will come when we don't get enough sleep. We burn the candle at both ends. We're not suitably rested. We get up raggy and tired and take it into our home life. And before you know it, there's a whole cycle of momentum there.
Of course, and it's hand in hand for these guys. The blows they're taking on a match day, if they're feeling body poor, they'll be mind poor. And then that has an effect on your sleep. You're feeling mind positive, and you might be slightly body poor, but you know that you're going to be able to sleep and do well. Then that can have a long-term impact on you as well. So it's a bit of a self-perpetuating cycle. I'm just glad for Simo that he's managed to get a bit of an endorsement in.
Yeah, well, he's got... Don't mention the name again, it's fine. No, that's it. That's it. I said one and one only. James, you've been looking anxiously at my piles of paper. I haven't dug anything out.
I was not nervous.
Aaron's been very cool about this. I do have to ask you a very serious question, though, James. And obviously the suicide of Dan Vickerman a couple of years ago. I mean, that must have brought you up short for a former colleague of yours.
Yeah, look, I mean, that was... That sort of hit you hard. Hit me hard, certainly. I was only with him a couple of months prior. We had a reunion in New York at the time. And, you know, look, thinking of a guy like Vix, who, you know, during his career, probably was the guy that you thought had done everything to prepare for life after. He stopped rugby, playing professionally, at a period when he was at his peak, to go and study, to do a degree at Cambridge, to play for Cambridge, get this big degree, come over, play, make a lot of money, then came back and obviously, you know, had a few injuries but finished playing, made a World Cup. So he did what you'd look at from a rugby player, everything you'd probably want to prepare for that life after. He'd gone to a top university. He was very intelligent. He was in at the top end of town, knew all the guys, knew exactly what he wanted to do post, and yeah, and then it was obviously something that was really hard to take, because he's his wife, his kids, he's got two young boys, and that was just something that brings the reality of what can happen, unfortunately, no matter what it looks like on the exterior. And Vix, it was a guy that was very, you'd almost refer him to as a bit of a dark guy. Like, used to get down really bad after losses. He'd beat himself up after performances, and almost to an extent where you're like, mate, it's not that bad, it'll be fine. And you always just thought of that at the time of, that was just him. He was so hard on himself, as we were talking before about his performances. That's what he put so much pressure on himself to perform, and maybe there was a deep-seated thing in there that unfortunately got the better of him, not too long ago. And it's just, it should be a reminder to every, athlete or person that it's not, it's not all the, on the outside it might all look fine, but there are people that are struggling, and it is better to talk, because always think, could have you done something different? Could have someone spoken to him? I hadn't spoken to him a little while, but at the time I caught up with him, he seemed fine, and that's the weird thing about it.
Are you all reasonably well placed for the future? Do you know what your plans are? Have you got transition plan in place, Simo?
Yeah, that's a good one, because I think you assume you do, and then you reach the end, and I'm not there yet, and then everything goes out the window. I don't know how you're feeling.
And that's life. That is life.
The big thing is, I don't want anyone to feel too sorry for us as like professional athletes. Like, we're living the dream. We're incredibly lucky. I think as a sport, rugby, we can get this nailed. We can get this process absolutely nailed. You've got very young players getting thrown into corporate boxes post games. On the whole, speak very well. I look at my teammates at the moment. Most had great education up until 18, and then maybe went to the academy and pursued rugby full time. But the amount of time we have in our hands, one day off in the week, you could be using, whether it's work experience or studying at home, this, that, and the other. The network that we have as a sport, through our alumni network and just corporate sponsors, and also the RPA do some great things in terms of getting access to counsellors, helpline, this, that, and the other, which I know a lot of peers of mine have used. We should be in a really good spot compared to, you talk to Mark Hunter around the hours that rowers put in, three sessions a day, 7 days a week on training camp for a large part of the year. That's incredibly tough. Rugby, we've got it a little bit easier.
Still think there's got to be a big mindset shift amongst the players. It's the old, you can take the horse water, but you can't make it drink. And there's opportunities there, as Simo's alluded to, but you've got to engage with it. And that's up to the players to a certain extent to change the mindset, whether that's as individuals or culturally around the club. But there's loads of opportunities out there.
I don't want to confuse you, but are you playing safe in going for a sporting directorship? At least it would keep your feet in the quicksand of rugby. You could stay.
I don't necessarily know whether the role and the master's program I did because I found it, the content, interesting, whether ultimately it will lead to that. For me, I would love to, having been involved for sport rugby for 15 years, I would love to go out and experience the real world, inverted commas, to actually gain some experience, some different insights, some different perspective on how things work differently.
But are you ready for that? Because you lose your previous status, won't you? You might have to go back in at a more humble stage.
He's got time on his side, I mean, it's very fresh. And I think the danger is that people are trying to be too forceful in putting their interpretation of what you should be following or what you should be going through. I think, I spoke to an ex-international player 2 weeks ago who has got 4 degrees, numerous caps, played a very good club career. We spoke for about an hour, and the comments at the end, there was a few expletives, but it was the first time that he felt he understood his purpose, because he felt if he had qualifications, if he stayed within the sport, his purpose would be self-apparent and that he could just drive himself forward on from that point. The reality is we've only got to look overseas at the US that, while academic qualifications are vitally important and they give you opportunity, they don't resolve the issues that athletes will face post-retirement. It's the same for financial wealth. You guys, you've mentioned it before, where you've got your grafters that are not earning the money, but still putting in the same contribution. And then you speak to, for example, Premier League players who are newly retired, are earning, you know, 250 grand a week. That doesn't sustain your transition or make you a happy person. It's that complete viewpoint of understanding and choice that is going to empower you to be able to make better decisions.
Yeah, but money can change your own unique window on the world, can't it? Let's be honest.
I think it depends how you deal with that.
Correct.
How you actually look after. You could be on 250 grand a week, but if you've got a 200 grand a day gambling habit, it ain't going to last you very long. It's actually...
And it goes back to motivations. Just because you have all the money in the world, that may not make you happy inside. And it sounds like an easy comment to make, but I've spoken to numerous people that have got a lot of money in the bank, and they're intrinsically unhappy because they're still seeking that motivation. And that, you look at Tate was speaking earlier about, you know, when players have just retired, you look at the divorce rates in sport. It's because they're chasing that change. If I change this, I'm going to be happy. The chances are that a lot of the time it's not the partner's fault in terms of why the divorce has occurred.
I see all that. The only point I'm making is to use a couple of high-profile footballers. At least people like Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard were able to take their 12 months, 18 months to just sit back, let their playing careers slip to one side, and then decide they
were still doing coaching within their football clubs. If you look at Leon Osman before Christmas, around autumn time, you know, he said for him it's like a bereavement. Now he's had a... You speak about a player at Everton, he's made the absolute most of his career. He's done extremely well financially for himself, but he's spoken about it as having a bereavement. That's something that you can't replace that. And Stevie and Frank have done extremely well in their transition. But if you look at the percentages, they're an absolute minority. Yeah. And this is what we're here to talk about. It's not just the guys that play in the Premier League that need help. You know, you've got your guys in the Championship. They don't get all of the support networks that these guys get, but they're still committing the same time and physically going through the same hard yards. So this is about, again, this goes back to scale of delivery that allows us to give resource to everybody that needs it, not just the select elite.
It's also finding, you know, what you're interested in. The majority of the guys now coming through will have gone straight from school into professional sport. I've done it. It's actually trying to work out what you are interested in, what your next obsession is, what your purpose, for want of a better word, but actually what is going to motivate you and get you out of bed and want you to commit your time. I guess all sportsmen by nature are pretty committed and diligent and have worked hard because of the nature of the sport that they find themselves in, and you want to be able to find that in the real world. Some guys are going to be fortunate, if you alluded to, that if they've been sensible with money, that actually they have a certain element of time. Some guys might not be. They have to go into taking the first job that comes.
Well, that's the point I was making. You know, there's a difference between having money in the bank that allows you a bit of time to make your choices, but I don't doubt for a second you need to fill the hole and find new identity. But there's a whole load of difference if you've still got, you know, you're struggling to meet the mortgage payment, etc. As the young buck around here, I'm assuming you are, and. I think you are.
I'm a very old-looking 29.
Okay. Yeah. How old are you, Aaron?
I'm 24.
Have you thought about it? Have you got a little bit of transition in your head as to how, when this all comes to an end, you'll drift off and do something else?
Yeah, I've definitely kind of thought about it. I think my kind of plan, and it has been for the last couple of years since I started the degree, was enjoy your career, put everything into it, get a degree by the time you're kind of 26, 27, and then kind of start building work experience, etc. Use the platform that you have. Being at a London club helps. Meet work experience, network, walk into a job at 31, 32. That was the kind of thing I thought. And then this year I've kind of had a bit of an awakening talking to some of my friends, Simo Cumming, and who puts in a lot of time and effort into what he does outside of rugby, kind of really enlightened me and made me think, well, I don't need to. Like Kev said, we've got so much time in the day. We get home at 3-ish, have a nap, and then 4 till, 8, 9, you can do stuff. So I can get an hour and a half of uni work done, and then I don't need to watch Netflix. I can, and a load of the boys are gaming and stuff. I'm not really into that. So I've realised that kind of time period, I can be spending putting kind of efforts into post-career. And at the moment, it's just kind of fishing out what is the the kind of sector or what I want to do.
What's the degree you're doing at the moment? History. Sorry, I missed it. History.
Yeah, so I did that deliberately because one, I found it interesting. I was always going to go do a history degree before rugby came along. And two, it leaves me quite broad. Just shows you're a bright kid, can assimilate information and argue. So that's kind of the plan now, to kind of find where my niche is, what I want to do, and then a kind of 26, 27, if I have a degree, I know where I want to go, what I want to go into, and hopefully still playing rugby. That next kind of few years, I'll be really kind of the situation Matt's in, where I can put a load of energy into it. And
yeah, we do have a couple of issues as rugby players, sportsmen. So when you talk about short-term goals, our schedule, but I'd say every team in the Premiership, is a week, 2 weeks. We have sent out to us. So in terms of booking activities outside of rugby, it's difficult, whether it's work experience, what your day off is for that week in the coming month. That can change at any time. So that is a difficult thing. And the other issue as well is that the perception of what we're doing with our time off. And I think, speaking honestly, coaches would like to think that we all go home, put our Normatec compression leggings on, sit there and play Fortnite and don't really get up and wait and prepare ourselves for the next training day. Mm. I'm not very honest about what I do outside of rugby, whether it's coming in for work experience at Ernst & Young.
Being at the moment.
Yeah, I know, but you know, if one of the coaches would be like, oh, what did you do yesterday? Rather than say, I got up early, commuted into town, worked the day, went home, I may tell a little fib and just say, oh, I just chilled out at home. Because I don't want them to think that I'm not putting everything into my rugby career. Mm. But the more I do outside of rugby, the better my performances are.
Let's just hope they're not on social media.
I was going to say, he does know this is being taken.
Yeah, premise of a podcast.
And finally, Skip, where are you at? You're 34 soon? Had your first baby?
First baby, yeah.
Baby girl. How are you feeling? What's the future hold for you?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting, because I'm obviously pretty aware that it's the end pretty soon. You know, I'm not a spring chicken. And you know, I think for me, I touched on it before, you know, a big thing was to me was I wanted to finish that degree. I started it when I was 18, first left school.
Sorry, did you say what yours was?
I did a business and sports management degree.
Okay. Yeah.
So I started a business degree when I first went to school and back in Queensland, got about halfway through it and rugby took over and I thought, I'll come back to it. Never came back to it. And then came over here and found that I had a lot more time on my hands here in the UK playing. Obviously giving up the international game probably helped that, the lack of, you know, not as much travel and time away from home. So yeah, decided that it was gonna irk me if I didn't finish it. I'm one of those people that once I start something, I wanna finish it. Mm-hmm. And it did take me 16 years to finish a standard business degree, but I got there in the end and now I'm thinking about what I wanna do next. And I think it's, you know, I'm leaning towards doing more study, doing a master's possibly, and looking into those options probably over here and something
you can afford to do that.
Yeah,
got a little bit of
so that's the other thing.
Just double checking. No, I don't know.
Well, I think it's important as well. I guess probably being playing for a long time, you have a lot of friends. I've got a lot of friends that played rugby that have obviously finished now from when I started. And a big thing talking, because I've spoken to a lot of them recently about, you know, what you did, how did it go for them, that transition, because it is a big thing. And it's, you know, you feel like you want to get it right. I have to get it right. I have to get the transition right. But a lot of them have said to me, the worst thing I did was go straight into something that I didn't know what I want. And it was the stress of like, I had to just do something and I did it and I hated it for 12 months. And it wasn't until I stepped away and went, you know, have a look at it. What do I actually want to do? And get that thought process of, you know, find something you really like. Because you've been doing, and I've been, as I said, full-time rugby for 15 years, you know, I probably don't have a real idea of what it is like to, you know, wake up and not have to worry about training, what about what my body's doing, and worry about and go through that process. And sort of, I think the time that a lot of them have said, take time, you know, you've got time, talk to people, go out and meet people. And I think you'll find then something will hit you. And I think that's where, to me, the
the extra education, because I did enjoy doing the business degree. I did enjoy parts of it. You almost want to learn more. You want to put yourself into something that allows you to have a better knowledge of something that is probably quite foreign to what we are, realistically. Like, it's not super foreign, but to go into the business world is different to what we've been doing and we've been growing up, and I've grown up and done. So I think that's probably where I'm at the moment, and that's what I want to do.
And there could be false starts along the way.
Oh, this is it. And the danger is that by being forced into an environment, it can compound your fear for that transition. And, you know, that goes back to the independence element as well. Are you in an environment where you're being able to make conscious choices on your own interpretation without there being a driving factor, for example, of a recruitment business trying to place you in that job because that's suitable for them? Or you gaining advice from somebody in particular because it's suitable for that organization against somebody else? This is all about you guys getting that chance, that clarity, but with space to breathe at the same time. And so the sooner you can ready yourselves for that in whichever way it resides, the better, you know, opportunities you will present yourself. And this is what it's about. It's about giving you the motivations for your own interpretation and your own observation, because you don't want to be told what to do. No. You've done that for 15 years, right? Yeah. This is about you guys having the toolkit for yourselves and you being able to make those decisions so that you're happy and those around you and your family are happy as well.
Yeah, I think we've got to flip up on its head a little bit, and rather than being so fearful around it, get excited. There's such a big world out there.
Yeah.
So many exciting jobs. Yeah. You know, we're stuck in this little goldfish bowl at the moment, and that's all the only world that we know. And actually, I talk to my friends in various industries. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
The stuff they're doing.
But there sometimes has to be a flick of a switch or a little bit of manoeuvring to get to a point where we see a blank sheet of paper as a positive and not as a scary thing.
Definitely. And we've got to change our mindset, as Matt says, as athletes, and being a lot more proactive earlier on in our careers. Aaron's only 24 and doing all kinds of different things, which is fantastic.
We've
talked to most of our teammates.
Yeah. So
you organise a speaker to come in to the training ground. invite goes out to 50 lads. You can guarantee that half the lads won't even bother reading the email. Then half the lads will be moaning around, oh, I'm going to miss the chase. I've got to sit around for an hour or so. Listen to a wealth manager come and talk about his career or her career.
But that's so typical.
It's tricky.
Mark Hunter.
I invited someone from LinkedIn to come to the club to deliver to our playing group how to set up your LinkedIn profile. Out of a squad of, say, 45, how many do you reckon turned up?
Five.
Three, and one of them was me.
That's
universal.
That's the whole thing around. The horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You can't hold its head under the water.
Mark Hunter, who's our head of athlete welfare and development, often says this, or he says it a lot. You know, when things are going well, you're less inclined to make those important decisions because everything's rosy. It's only when the proverbial hits the fan that you think, I better do something.
Yeah.
And you can guarantee that if somebody had been reprimanded for their use of social media or something, all of a sudden those numbers would have crept up for LinkedIn, or, you know, if the speaker had been on a topic where one of the guys had been burnt the week before, all of a sudden they would have been in the back of the room sitting there nervously. It's, as everyone's been saying, it's how we can change that discussion point for them to understand this is important but non-threatening at the same time.
I was in an environment at Saracens which they really push hard for that stuff outside. I think the impact of Brendan Venter coming in, who was like a fully qualified doctor whilst doing his role of DOR, kind of set the precedent. And coming into that academy at 18, you were pushed and you'd very much be the outlier if you weren't doing something. And I think for all their flaws, that is something they do quite well. And it's something that can...
That's fascinating, because people have spoken about Saracens for many a year now, and yet other organisations haven't replicated their model. So it makes you wonder what that resistance to change is. Is it we're concerned it will take away from our performance on a match day, or is it just that they're a bit fearful of that change and therefore we won't commit to it?
I think that's the biggest thing. You've got to be able to show to owners, the sports directors, coaches, that actually it is a positive in terms of the performance, because ultimately they are judged on the outcome of a Saturday. So their behaviour around that's not gonna shift. And I think if you find younger coaches coming through, and we've got a great one now at Leicester in Jordan Murphy, he's really kind of progressive in his thought process. He will see that as part of the holistic performance of the individual and the team, I think.
Guys, we've had some challenging topics, but I have absolutely loved that. So anytime you want to come and rejoin us, you would be more than welcome. Good luck for the future. That is it for another episode of Blood, Sweat and Fears. Thank you for listening. Much more to come, both in terms of topics and a huge range of athletes and sports people in coming episodes. For more information about the program itself, you can visit our website, which is ey.com/UK/personal-performance-program. This podcast and future podcasts in the Blood, Sweat and Fears series will be available on iTunes and via the EY website by visiting ey.com/UK/PAS/podcasts. Please do help us spread the word. Our thanks to James Horwill, to Aaron Morris, to Matty Simmons and Matthew Tate, and of course Scott. I'm Mark Clement, brought to you by EY, Building a Better Working World. Thanks for listening to the latest episode of Blood, Sweat and Fears, the ultimate podcast with a focus on athlete experiences, readiness and preparation for life in and out of sport. Goodbye.